Hi everyone, my name's Cody Wilborn. I work at Parsley. It's a startup providing real-time content analytics to large publishers like the Wall Street Journal, HuffPost, and NBA and NBC. We help them quantify readers' attention. I've been a sysadmin by trade for the better part of a decade. And like many of you, I fought the demons of on-call. Those 3 a.m. alerts, pagers where you can't, where nothing's actually broken, but you can't turn off that monitor because it was to prevent something and you can't remember what. And that inbox flood that never ends, no matter how you write your email filters. It'd be great if you could stop all of this alert madness at its source, but you know, nobody has time for that. So why do vendors charge more for 4-hour support the next business day? There's costs associated with it, like availability, scheduling, vacation time, and benefits. And time spent responding to one customer can't be spent on another, because you don't know how long those incidents are going to take to resolve. They're beholden to an SLA and need to keep up with it. So why aren't these costs taken into account when you put salary-exempt employees on call? They're just expected to handle whatever alerts are thrown at them, including the false alarms. And businesses aren't hit by any direct costs because it's part of your job responsibilities, in addition to all the rest of the work that you're supposed to get done. It's easy and tempting to ignore and just set up more email filters to get rid of all of the noise. But so today we're going to explore some of the hidden costs to justify a return on investment on your alerts and how to prune your alerts to get rid of false alarms. So let's start exploring some of these hidden costs. Just a warning, some of these numbers are going to be simplified to kind of just emphasize the point. And we're also going to talk about costs in terms of cost to the business. This is not to reduce you to being a cog in the machine, but just to kind of illustrate what the cost is to the business so that you can justify a return on investment and actually improve your experience at work because you spend so much time there. We're going to start with the easiest cost to realize, which is your investigation time. You know, an alert will come in, you'll check it out and decide whether it is or isn't a problem. And that investigation time is pretty simple. It's just hourly wage multiplied by time spent. But the time spent isn't the only cost. You have to add opportunity cost against doing other work. Since on-call is in addition to your job responsibilities, you're still responsible for getting your work done and your projects done. So opportunity cost is the basically defined as the return of your most lucrative option minus your chosen option. And so your most lucrative option in most cases will be whatever work you were supposed to be doing. And then your chosen option is fixing your alert, or fixing your systems when they're down. And if that number goes negative, well, it was actually an outage or something, and that's actually the more lucrative option you should have chosen. But if it's a false alarm and you investigated it, you didn't solve any outage, so there's $0 return there. And if you didn't fix the monitor, you didn't make any improvements, and so you had a $0 added value again. So that means your opportunity cost is basically what you should have gotten done that day. And if you do manage to get back to what you thought you were going to do, that interruption has a cost. Up to 40% of someone's productive time, according to the American Psychological Association. So you want to add another 40% of that intended productivity on top of your investigation time and opportunity cost. And that's going to snowball quickly the more alerts that you have. That's actually quite a bit to kind of unload on a single slide. So we're going to write that out as a formula with some numbers to just illustrate this. So let's say for easy math, you have an employee with that costs $100 an hour. That's going to be their salary and benefits, not necessarily take-home pay. And then we're going to make a leap into productivity. Well, every business is going to calculate productivity differently, taking into account which projects you're working on, what your individual job roles are. The business overall is seeking to make a profit on every employee. Otherwise, it makes no sense to hire someone. So again, for easy math, we just say an employer wants to make a 2x revenue on every employee. That's going to pay for the employee's costs plus a profit which will then go towards, you know, servers and other things, and then finally at the end of the day, profit for the business. And so that number is actually amortized over a long period of time. You'll work on your projects, you'll deliver them, and then the business will reap the benefit of the project. While you're working on it and there's no actual deliverable, there's no money being made by the company. So we're just talking amortized values. That 2x multiplier will give us an intended productivity of $200. And remember, that false alarm provided $0 in value if it was investigated and you didn't fix anything. So our opportunity cost is at $200 in intended productivity minus the $0 investigating the false alarm. Then we're going to add in that context switching of 40% of somebody's productive time. That's 24 minutes where you had to pick up what you left off, you lost your train of thought, you have to figure out what you were doing, and that's where that costs come from. As we said, that we valued that at $200, and so 40% of that in addition. So just a single hour of looking at an alarm, you're looking at a cost multiplier of about 4x what you thought that investigation time was. And it only goes up from there as you increase how much you intended, or your intended revenue per employee. But people rarely spend an hour looking at a single issue. In most cases, you're only going to be looking at it a few minutes at a time. But in aggregate, you're looking at an hour over the course of a day or a week. And so again, this whole section is on amortized values, not point in time. So this is the cost over 1 year if that $100 an hour person spends 5% of their time checking false alarms. They'll get an email, their inbox will chime, they'll read it, decide what to do, and then delete it. Maybe once in a while they'll spend 20, 30 minutes investigating something, but it's actually just a ghost in Nagios or whatever your monitoring platform is. 5% time isn't that much. It's a day out of the month or 2 hours out of a week. And so if you spend a minute on each email that comes in, you hit that with just a rate of 3 emails per hour. And so for any individual employee in an on-call rotation, it's maybe 2 hours out of their month or however frequent that they're on call, and it's 3 emails an hour. Why would they bother mentioning that to anybody? It's just part of your normal email load. But that's $39,000 you can pull out of the couch cushions by reducing your false alerts. Next, we have cognitive load. It's the idea that you expend effort to remember things. And so if you have a lot in your plate, it becomes difficult to manage everything. You turn to something like to-do lists. And it's also one of the benefits of standardizing systems. Instead of remembering facts about every system, you memorize a pattern and use that pattern to work on multiple machines. It's a psychological argument for why cattle versus pets. So alerts have cognitive load as well. Like, which ones are real, which ones are noise? And all the stuff you need to know to be on call is actually tribal knowledge that has to be taught to you. How long do you have to spend to teach a new person this knowledge? And so I'd actually argue that reducing the amount of tribal knowledge required will reduce the upfront costs of training someone without actually losing any future returns on the training. Because if that tribal knowledge is skipped or forgotten, how many alerts does that new person have to investigate before they learn that it's a false alarm? And there's direct investigation impacts right there. As we said, it's 4x their hourly costs at least. But if those false alarms never happened, you wouldn't have needed to spend time teaching them that they were false alerts, meaning you can completely eliminate the investigation costs in that scenario. So raise your hand. Have you ever had a phantom pager alert where you swore your pager buzzed, but it actually didn't? Okay, that's about half the room. It's an hallucination caused by the stress of being on call. Your pager becomes a phantom limb, and it's rather attached to you. Everything we talked about so far adds to your level of stress. And you can't get the work done you were supposed to. You've got too many things to remember. But there's other stresses of on call, too. There's urgency in on call. On call only has a short window where you have to respond to an incident. And being late is super stressful for many people. And then there's urgency in that being down is bad, so you have to act as quickly as possible when this comes up. There's uncertainty in when an alert may come. If you have to you want to run to the store or see a movie, you might have to cut that short. The alert could come as soon as you try to go to bed. No use staying up. It'll come right after you try to go to sleep. It'll come in the middle of the night, or it'll wake you up 30 minutes before your alarm clock meant to. And then there's the duration of the on-call. And after about a week or so of on-call, you start getting worn down from your repeated alerts. And if your on-call rotation only has two or three people, that week of on-call suddenly turns into half the year. It very quickly becomes a duration problem in aggregate instead of just any individual week. There's stress and expectations, whether it's internal expectations you put on yourself or external for the your coworkers are putting on you. It's easy to be pressured in on-call because it's your job to keep everything up and running. And if the environment goes down, it's a bad thing. So you must not be doing your job. And that's just a horrible realization. So stress can contribute to mistakes on the job and a variety of health problems. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, workers who have to take time off due to stress, anxiety, or related disorders will be off the job for about 20 days. Can your business actually afford to be down an employee for 20 days, and not to mention any additional medical costs associated with that? So here we have some studies performed at a hospital. A 50% decline in medication errors and a 70% reduction in malpractice claims by reducing stress. The way the study reduced stress was by educating employees and management on job stresses, changes in policies and procedures to reduce organizational sources of stress, and establishing employee assistance programs, specifically help and counseling for the work and personal problems. So they weren't just trying to confine stress to work-related stresses. It was anything that the employees were kind of undergoing. And so wouldn't an organizational transformation like this in your company translate to fewer bugs or fewer outages? I'd say most likely, because that 50% decline in medication errors and 70% in malpractice claims are mistakes due to stress. What sort of mistakes happen due to stress in your business? In a study published in the Journal of Occupational Environmental Medicine, they put fatigue-related productivity losses at $1,967 per employee annually. Another study estimated that lost productivity due to poor sleep costs $3,156 per employee with insomnia and $2,500 for less severe sleep problems. And so if people are missing sleep due to on-call alerts, they're more likely to have trouble thinking, concentrating, and remembering. For the business, that's going to impact productivity. And free coffee in the break room won't fix the issue because it's not a matter of being awake. Even with caffeine, your brain isn't functioning fully. The risk of an employee being in an accident increases with sleep deprivation, as being drowsy can slow reaction times as much as being drunk. At extreme levels of sleep deprivation, employees undergo microsleeps, which are seconds to minute-long periods where a person goes unconscious. But the people that undergo these microsleeps are unaware of them. They instead believe that they were awake the whole time, or they just lost focus and, I'm back to what I'm doing. Accidents impact worker comp rates after a claim. And you definitely don't want OSHA reportable events on your to-do list. A variety of health problems that are also correlated with stress can occur with sleep deprivation, like weakened immune system and high blood pressure. It also increases the risk for obesity, heart attack, stroke, and diabetes. One study found that participants who had fewer than 7 hours of sleep were three times more likely to develop a cold than people who slept 7 hours or more. And so that comes back to health insurance rates besides employees needing sick days. So have you ever had to miss or skip out on something important due to a pager? It's probably the whole room here. In a 2014 survey on workplace flexibility, The Society for Human Resource Management found that 32% of companies participating in the survey saw a decrease in absenteeism after they implemented flex time policies. And 26% reported productivity increases. If people could get what they needed in their lives done, they became less distracted, more productive, and they didn't need to play hooky from work. And so you can tie this back to the work-life balance with on-call. If between their typical workload and the after-hours on-call that's kind of forced on them, employees can't live their lives are going to suffer. They'll mentally check out and not put forth more effort than the bare minimum. And that sleep deprivation and stress I mentioned will be compounding factors overall in their work-life balance. So at an extreme, beyond becoming unengaged with the company, they may become actively disengaged. Gallup's 2017 State of the American Workplace report puts this at 16% of employees globally. Actively disengaged employees negatively impact the business. They'll negatively influence their coworkers, they'll miss work days, and they'll drive customers away. They're also more likely to steal from or disrupt the business. And so Gallup estimates that this actively disengaged employee costs the U.S. economy $483 billion to $603 billion in lost productivity annually. So what might an actively disengaged employee look like in practice? Beyond negatively impacting morale, you know, cynicism, that sort of thing, a disengaged employee may intentionally ignore pagers. They'll frequently come up with excuses like they forgot they were on call, or they didn't charge their phone, or they didn't have cell service. And those employees may ultimately leave the company. 73% of actively disengaged employees are looking for new jobs, compared to 37% of actively engaged employees. And if this employee leaves, a replacement hire costs 15 to 25% of your first year salary if you use a recruiter, and then you have to still train them. So finally, we get to the idea of alarm fatigue, where you're put in a boy who cries wolf situation and ignore a problem because the previous alerts have been false. You become desensitized to the constant alarms and ignore new data. Do you doubt this could happen? In 2010, a man suffered a fatal heart attack at Massachusetts General Hospital. 10 nurses on duty could not recall hearing the alarms or seeing scrolling messages on 3 separate hallway signs that indicated their patient's critical condition. State investigators attribute this to alarm fatigue after desensitization to constant alarms throughout the day. The alarms all sound the same regardless of where they're coming from, so they unintentionally become background noise. And that downgrades the severity those alarms represent. Missing alarms in tech generally doesn't have a life-threatening impact. It's normally just a service outage. But what does missing an outage mean for your business? Is it it's costly, not only in terms of immediate lost revenue, but also customer perception of your brand. Customers will get finicky and want you demand refunds, SLA credits, and then they may not. You may get a bad rep in the industry. But we're not going to stand here today and tell you the sky's falling and you're losing actually all this money without actually telling you how to make a difference. So first, you have to find the problematic alerts in your environment. How do you find them? You could go see if your monitoring or alerting tool has canned reports you can run. PagerDuty does, a lot of other products have these kind of built in. But if you don't have that, you could also go parse the logs of your monitoring system. Most of them should jot out something that like, I sent this alert at such and such time. But you could also go spelunking through that inbox folder that you never look at because your email filter threw everything in there. That's also an excellent source of where your alerts are and which ones are most common. So then we have to prune the alerts. The University of Massachusetts Memorial Hospital found that 40% of cardiac monitor patients didn't actually need to be on monitors at all based on the American College of Cardiology criteria. So your systems don't actually need as much monitoring as you think. Determine how actionable your alerts are. If it's something you wait to self-resolve, get rid of that alert. It's not doing any help for you. And determine the urgency. If you don't have to drop everything to solve it, it's not worthy of being a pager. For the monitors you do feel are necessary but not urgent, make sure that they have the right scope. You've got three main categories of messages in your monitoring system. You have pager-worthy alerts, notifications that would be your warning level threshold or something that lets you know that you can cut this alert off before it gets worse, and then informational messages that need to get logged somewhere. The backup ran, the disk failed over, something of that nature. Monitors that alert when they don't have to are noise, and likewise, critical information being sent to anything and then a pager will just be thrown in your email filter. Informational messages should not be sent to your inbox, and that's everything you're probably filtering off to trash right now. You have to log this to a syslog, Elk, or Splunk server and not your inbox. And so, but if you really have to use email because you don't have that sort of infrastructure available, send that to a separate email account so it's not clogging your mail account. This means people can all still access it and query it without having to be you, and it cuts down on that noise in your inbox. With today's complex systems, we've moved past single host catastrophic point of failure scenarios. A single dead host or a dead disk isn't urgent. So why do I need to wake up for that dead host or dead disk when a cluster or failover has already occurred? Prefer cluster metrics to host metrics and user experience metrics over both of those. So you'd want to prefer checking that a user can access their account information from the database over checking the database cluster health. But you'd prefer that database cluster health check over like a process check on individual nodes. Consider downgrading all those individual node checks to just informational messages so you still have the data available to you when you go to look and solve a problem. Getting rid of those host-level alerts in a cluster reduces huge amounts of chatter because the cluster will handle most failures for you. Once upon a time, I had a reminder alert sent every 5 minutes because our monitoring system didn't have an all-clear notification. It was a very binary view of the world. You were either alerting or not alerting. And the only way you could tell that you actually fixed the problem was when the email storm stopped. The monitoring systems these days have become a lot nicer, and they'll send out those all clear notices for you. If you need a reminder to perform an action, those need to be sent on an order of hours or days, not minutes. Don't do that 5 minute thing. There's terminology from outside the tech industry called alarm flood. It's an American National Standards Institute and International Society of Automation standard defined as 10 or more alarms in any 10-minute window per operator. And that operator is most likely your on-call engineer when applied to tech. While an experienced operator can handle more simultaneous alerts than maybe that 10 compared to a trainee, an operator, it's the idea that at some level, you functionally can't understand a new alert coming in because you're still dealing with the old one, trying to figure out what it is. Metrics you can track in your environment relating to alarm flood is time in alarm flood and the volume of flood coming in. So reminder alerts generate alarm flood because the operator now has to determine that this alert is a repeat and not new information that they need to be aware of in trying to solve a problem. That's why you need to limit how frequently those send reminders. Another way you can reduce alarm flood is by combining related alerts into a single high-level page that has contextual information to be able to investigate. So there are a lot of monitoring systems refer to them as composite monitors, where you combine existing low-level monitors into a higher-level one, which you can route to be a more actionable alert. For example, I run an Apache Storm cluster at work. And Apache Storm has multiple jobs, or they're called topologies, that run simultaneously. Those jobs have shared dependencies, like databases and things. The standard approach is to go ahead and instrument each one of those jobs with the same, let me know if it's slow or down, and then send me an alert. But since I know all of these have shared dependencies, which frequently cause a shared failure, I can set up a composite monitor that triggers if at least one of the submonitors are triggered. So long as the composite alert hasn't been cleared, on-call needs to continue remediating. The composite alert will provide the context of the active submonitors to on-call to let them know that job one, job two are slow, but not job 3 or 4. You need to keep investigating. So let's go back to that statement I made about checking user experience. If the check user can't access their account, how do you know if the root cause lies with a database, a web server, or because UI decided to rename the login form div? If you create a composite monitor that combines that user experience check with a database a health check, and then a second one with the user experience check and a load balancer or web server health check, then you have all the context you need to dive right into the source of the problem. The individual alerts that are set up for in that composite alert will just send low priority notifications or informational messages so that it's all available if, in case of emergency. So if your warning or alert can be reduced to a runbook with a defined set of steps, why not have the computer fix it for you? That's a perfect task for computers. If you're going to log in, run the same command to check something, run the same restart, prune the same log files because it ran out of disk again, that's a perfect task for computers. But if you choose automation, beware of the dragons that lay there. Behaviors like restarts, reboots, and RM are all very destructive commands, and you'll want to be very certain that this automation will always do what you want it to. Just leave it in debug mode for a few weeks, print out what steps you would have taken, and make sure it's always doing the right thing at the right time. Consider what happens if your entire environment tries the automated repair at once. It's generally not pretty the first time around because of how things interact with each other and you didn't realize them. If your system needs is alerting because it's fragile, whether that alerting is real or false, that needs to be fixed. Add high availability, add capacity, and get development time to fix brittle code, like automatically reconnecting to a server instead of needing a server restart. Those things all cost money, but everything I talked about in the first part of this presentation is how much you're actually sacrificing by not having the issue fixed. You can make a stronger resource justification in order to avoid the waste. And so I'm sorry if I just gave some of you flashbacks, but there's something to learn from printers. And so my last suggestion for today is what I call the printer rule. As horrible as printers are, you don't need to service them 24 hours a day unless you work at a printing press. Likewise, not everything in your environment needs to actually be monitored and managed 24/7. There are most likely aspects of the business that only need 9-to-5 support, because if a tree falls, no one's going to notice or need it removed until the next morning. I've done this in a previous role where OnCall worked with QA Lab to reduce their support hours to business hours only, except in the month or two where they actually staffed 24/7, that was their crunch mode. So QA got the support they needed when they needed it, but for the other 10 months of the year, we got a huge reduction in on-call alerts. Surely there's services or something in your business that can be reduced to just 9-to-5 support. So your monitoring system is a constant reminder of the work not put into it. Default alerts and untuned alerts all contribute to noise that's going to eat into your time, and at worst, you'll ignore an actual problem. Today, you've been given some tools to help you improve your alerts and make on-call more manageable. And you've got a better understanding of the intangibles present in the false alarms. The problem won't end tomorrow if you start working on it today. It'll be a process, but just take a little bit at a time and get your whole team involved, and you'd be surprised what you can accomplish. Over the span of 6 months at Parsley, by tweaking monitors and alert thresholds, we went from a high of 182 pagers a week to just 8 to 12. And we went from over 1,100 notifications this time last year to just 23 last week. And most of those notifications are during business hours or during peak usage hours, which is business hours for us. So that on call, after hours on call, is a breeze compared to how it was a year ago. You can get these kind of results too. You just have to start working on it a little bit at a time. You can find the slides, the citations for all those numbers and stuff that I threw out at you, and related readings on my website here. Thank you for your time, and we'll go ahead and open up the floor for questions, I guess.
We have a microphone up here. If anyone wants to come up and ask questions, definitely use the microphone because we have the recording. And so, anyone? Anyone? So, anyone else like flashbacks when you put the picture of the printer on the screen? That was traumatic, right? Yeah, you needed to warn people before you do something like that.
Right? I should have.
Yeah. No questions?
Who's going to fix their alerts when they get home?
Hands up, yeah. Yeah, that's right. All right. All right. Well, thank you very much for your talk. We're about 10 minutes early for the break, and so we're definitely going to sort out the projector issues here. And please don't hold that against our wonderful speaker. It was a technical problem, not his slides. And if you want to see the slides, there will be the recording available, posted in about a month or so, usually after the conference. And you can see them all again. And of course, are you going to share your slides?
They're already on the website.
They're already up. Okay, wow. That was. So he's already ahead of the game. So you can look at the slides online. And we have an hour and a half break for lunch, and we resume here at 2 o'clock. So everyone, enjoy, and we'll see you later today. And a round of applause for our speaker.